Hello and welcome, Breakthrough Success listeners. I'm your host, Mark Guberti, and this is the podcast where you'll learn how to achieve the breakthroughs you've been looking for in your business and life. If you want to grow your content brand, you'll definitely want to add my latest book, Content Marketing Secrets, to your reading list. This book will teach you how to create, promote, and optimize your content for growth and revenue. You can get your copy at Mark Guberti, that is Mark with a C. So markguberti.com/book. And now let's dive right into the show. For episode 86 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast, we are going to talk about living the 17-hour work week through outsourcing with our guest, John Jonas. John is the author of the book, How I Replaced Myself by Outsourcing to the Philippines. Tim Ferriss's 4-hour work week changed John's life, and John figured out how to achieve that lifestyle. But he saw the 17-hour work week as a more practical method to avoid boredom and make it easier for him to pursue his work. So John is all about working as little as he needs so that he can spend more time with his family, play golf, and help others embrace the 17-hour work week lifestyle. And now it is my pleasure to welcome John to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
John, it is such a pleasure to have you on the Breakthrough Success Podcast, and I really look forward to talking about the 17-hour work week, but I'd love to get some background first. So what exactly has the 17-hour work week lifestyle meant for you?
As we kind of got on our call, I told you that yesterday I ran 12 miles in the mountains with some friends, and today I rode my bike to recover from that. And that's a lot of what it has meant to me is freedom. I did both of those things. Yesterday we left at 12:30, and I was gone from 12:30 to 4:30 in the middle of the day. And today I went and rode my bike at 11:15 and came back at 12:30, and then went to my kids' singing thing at school at 1 o'clock. And that's what it has meant for me and my family is my kids got home at 3 o'clock and I had worked from 2 to 3 and I went out and spent time with my kids. So,
John, yeah. Thank you for sharing with us how it's affected you. And I can see that being a big dream of a lot of parents, just being able to spend time with their family and their kids as much as possible when they're available in those moments. But people are not at that position right now, like 17-hour work weeks or something that a lot of people would really strive towards. I know a lot of it is based on outsourcing and delegation, but when you're that business owner who, let's say, has 40 hours per week, what do you outsource first?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. There's a big disconnect between people who want to get there and people who will actually get there, right? And I actually believe it's more possible than a lot of people think it is. So for me, I have taken a different approach towards running my business, towards creating content, towards whatever it is that I'm doing, than most people do in outsourcing. So when you ask, what do you outsource first? For me, the answer to that is outsource something you are currently doing. Outsource something you know how to do really well. Don't outsource something else you need to get done. I mean, that's good. That's fine. Whatever. You know, if you don't know how to build a website, you really need a website built. That's cool to get someone else to build your website. But if you want to live the 4-hour work week lifestyle, or for me, it's 17 hours, you have to get rid of the things that are on your plate. And so the first hire you make is someone who can do something you are currently doing in your business to get yourself a couple hours back. And the whole purpose behind this, there's a couple things. One, you get some time back. Two, you're likely to have a better experience in outsourcing if it's something that you know how to do and something you can teach someone else how to do. And when they don't do it right, you can give them feedback and say exactly what's going on, and you see it. Whereas when they don't get your website looking right and you have no idea how, then all you can say is, no, this isn't what I want. And that's not really helpful, right? It's way more difficult to have a good experience if you don't know how to do it. Third, outsourcing something that you do know how to do and something that you're good at gets something off your plate, which allows you to be good at something else, allows you to focus. Well, the reality is it lets you focus on your business instead of in your business. And any time you can gain by focusing on your business instead of in is a win. and you're more likely to be able to gain more time back. So,
John, thank you for sharing us what we should outsource first. And I definitely agree with outsourcing something you know, so it's easier to instruct someone when mistakes are made or when there is a disconnect. And I noticed about you is that you hire a lot of Filipino workers to take on some of the tasks that you would normally have to take on. And the wage for Filipino workers seems to be significantly less than other parts of the world, like US and Europe. So how do you find Filipino workers who seem to take on lower wages in comparison to those previous places that I mentioned?
Well, obviously the Philippines is a third world country, and you know, the cost of living there is very different. But the reason I hire Filipinos is because culturally it's different than the rest of the world. Like it's different than hiring someone from India or someone from Pakistan or Guatemala or Mexico or Ukraine. There's a different culture in the Philippines that provides for a higher likelihood of success. So that's a little bit why you mentioned the Philippines and why I will only hire in the Philippines, because the chance of success are just higher. You asked how I find them. How I find them is at onlinejobs.ph. That's the website it's a huge database of Filipino workers, and you can sort through them. You can post a job, you get them to apply, or you contact them based on their resumes. The how to find them is not that hard once you know.
John, thank you for sharing with us how you're able to find Filipino workers who take on those low wages, and the different cost of living definitely having a really big impact, because a US dollar to one person means something completely different if you're living in the United States versus if you're living somewhere else in the world. And one of the things that people think about is there's a saying that goes around, you get what you pay for. But it seems like these low-cost Filipino freelancers, based on their living conditions, will give you a lot, even though you're not paying them very much, like in comparison to if you're paying someone from the US, Europe, or somewhere like that. So how do you make sure you're finding low-cost freelancers and employees that effectively get the job done? Is it just look for a Filipino worker, or is it a little more than that?
So you're absolutely right that you get what you pay for, generally. But I could give you a whole bunch of examples where that's not the case. But generally, you know, you have someone who's an expert in the US at something, at design, and you have someone who's an expert in the Philippines at design, and that designer in the US is $200,000, and that designer in the Philippines is $20,000 a year. And, you know, so there's a huge cost difference. How do you make sure that you're getting good people? I actually think so. One of the things that I've found in myself that I do different than what most people do. Well, no, let me rephrase that. I find that I do things different than most people. And I find that's true in most successful entrepreneurs, is they do things differently. They think differently than other people. And so when I always get asked, how do you make sure you're finding good people? And I think the better question is, how do you manage people into being good? Where, like, people ask me, I want to hire a rock star. How do I find a rock star worker? You don't. You don't find a rock star. Yeah, you can get lucky and find one, but the real situation is you manage someone into becoming a rock star in the Philippines. So, you know, you can recruit someone with good talent. That doesn't mean they're going to be a great worker for you. Having them become a great worker is dependent on how you treat them and how much investment you put in, you personally or someone on your team, how much of an investment do you make in this person, in training them and bringing them up to speed and giving them the tools that they need to succeed, in helping them succeed when they're failing rather than just firing them. So how do you make sure you're getting good workers? It's not that hard to find someone with good talent. You go to onlinejobs.ph, there's 500,000 profiles there. You post saying, I want someone with perfect English and you're going to get, you know, 40 job applications with people with perfect English. Maybe you're going to get 100 applications and you're going to weed out 60 of them and 40 of them are going to have perfect English. Maybe it's, you know, maybe your ratio is different depending on your job post. But from there, the real key to success is how do you handle that person? That's the difference in finding someone who's really great and capable of doing the work is how do you manage them? And I know that's not what you wanted to hear.
It's definitely a different answer from something that I've gotten in the past where people say, like, look for these attributes or something like that. But you're suggesting something completely different where you're saying, find someone, but it's up to you with the training and all the support you give them to turn them into that rock star. So that is definitely a different angle. But definitely believe we should be focusing on that angle of how do we train our freelancers and make them better than they already are. And with all
So let me hold on a second. Let me cut you off for a second because I think there's a difference in what I do versus what most people do. And you kind of hit it on the head just now when you said, how do we train our freelancers? I don't. And this is probably just a linguistics thing between, you know, between what you're saying and what I do. But I think it's important that people understand this. So I don't hire freelancers ever. A freelancer is someone who works for you temporarily and then they're gone and they go work for someone else. They do a project for you and then they're gone and they work for someone else. I hire employees. I hire them full-time. I hire them long-term. Filipinos are ridiculously loyal. You hire them, they'll never quit as long as you treat them well. And that is a big difference where, like, you don't want to train a freelancer. That's too painful and not worth it. And nobody ever wants to do that because that person doesn't work for you in a month. And so any time you spend training them is wasted time. I hire long-term people that when I hire them, I hire them for their aptitude rather than their skills. And then I hope that they'll work for me in 10 years, which people that I hired, I started doing this 12 years ago. People that I hired 12 years ago still work for me today. And people that I hired 10 years ago still work for me today. And people I hired 8 years ago, you know. So any time that I spend putting in the relationship where, you know, yes, I could have done this thing better on my own and faster on my own, but instead I spent the time 12 years ago to teach someone else to do it, and that person still works for me. And because of the culture of the Philippines, when they get a job offer making twice as much as what you're paying them, they don't leave. They don't go jump ship. They don't take on another project because they're making a dollar an hour more than what you're paying them. So there's a whole bunch of cultural things that make this – that make what I do different than what most people do and than what most people want to do. Most people want to go to Upwork and hire someone to get this project done, build my website for me. And the reality is that a website doesn't get built. It's always being built. If you stop building it, it dies. And that's just how software is. That's how websites are. If you don't update it and manage it and continue with it, it dies. And so rather than hiring a one-time person, I always hire long-term people. And for me and my business, and a lot of people are going to poo-poo at this, and that's fine. If something is a one-time thing, I don't do it. It's not worth it. Now, yeah, there's copywriting that can be done one time. But generally, a one-time project is not worth my time because that will never allow you to live the 17-hour work week. That will never allow you to walk away and build systems in your business that other people do. That other people do the work for you, you're always involved as long as it's a one-time thing that you need a single project done. So that makes sense.
Yes, and I greatly appreciate you taking the time to share those extra insights with us because those provide a whole new scope of what it means and how we're able to live that 17-hour work week and hiring full-time instead of just to get this thing done and that thing done and that's it. Will definitely result in better long-term potential. But as you hire more employees, I mean, you mentioned you've hired people like 12 years ago, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, and they're still working for you. Like when you have a team of like one, two, or three, it's easy to interact with everybody. But how do we manage our growing teams, make sure all of the work is still effectively implemented, even as we're like 5 people on the team, 10 people, 20 people, and so on?
So I have 22. And I'm trying to think of the different teams that we have. So let's see. Our customer service team doesn't directly report to me. They report to someone else. But I still see most of their work. There's just very, very little that they need. You know, like once a week, I'll spend 10 minutes on something with them. Our admin backend team that manages, we do all kinds of admin work in online jobs to make people have a good experience. That team requires a little bit more. Not that the team requires more, but the time that I spend with them is more process building. Like, this process needs tweaking. You guys have 20 different processes that you do. This process needs improvement. How can we improve this? What software can we build that will help improve this? Or what steps can we take at this point in the process where it's failing that we can do it? And that's where I spend my time, is thinking through solutions to problems in the business. I never touch the actual implementation of that myself. So I will only think through it. So like programmers who work for us, they're working on something. I can see something's wrong, or we have a better way of doing something. I think through that process and then give it back to them and they implement. Or a designer is the same way. So with 22 people, I'm involved with most of them. And really, it takes me like 2 hours a day, because all I do is think. I never touch WordPress. I never log in to WordPress. If something's wrong, I tell someone else to fix it. And I think that's important. And this doesn't happen overnight. It took me a while to get to this point. But the more things that you can start giving to someone else and start – and this is a key with the Philippines, is that these people have been with me for 8 years now, or 5 years, or 2 years. You know, after 2 years, someone's really, really capable in your business. But you have to have someone that's going to be there long term. So and that's you know, again, that's the Philippines. That's why it's so different.
John, thank you for sharing those insights on how we're able to manage our growing teams. And you talked a lot about some of the things you do during your 17 hours, like strategizing, thinking, and interacting with your employees. But is there anything else you're doing during those 17 hours, or is it just those things?
So, and this is a, all right. So Tim Ferriss in the 4-Hour Workweek talks about going on a news diet. I read that book, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, and I'm on a news diet. I don't see any news ever, because it doesn't fit in my life. It doesn't have a place in my life anymore. I don't watch YouTube videos. If someone says, "Have you seen?" I say no, because I haven't seen it. I don't look at Facebook. I never look at Facebook. I am very protective of my time. I don't take phone calls, because, you know, someone's trying to sell me something and they're like, "Hey, when do you have a couple minutes to get on the phone?" I don't have time to get on the phone with you, because getting on the phone with you means an hour of my time. If you want to talk to me, you send me an email and I can spend 1 minute replying instead of an hour on the phone. So I'm super protective of my time. So in terms of what do I do during the day, those are the things that I don't do during the day that most people spend a good amount of time on. What do I do? I told you I think, and that's really mostly what I do. I do some email, but I get very few emails. A lot of my stuff is in a project management system. We use Basecamp. And I'm looking at my open tabs right now. That's all I do, is I think. And you know, obviously I said that this it takes time to get there. This isn't like a magic pill. It's not an overnight thing that's going to fix your life overnight. But over time, as you start to give things to other people and you start to become the CEO of your business instead of being the grunt worker and trying to be the CEO, the more you work on the business instead of in, the more you get to think. The more you get to think and have other people implement your ideas for you.
John, thanks for sharing us what you do during those 17 hours with thinking, once again, being one of the main focuses and working on your business instead of in your business. And throughout your journey towards achieving the 17-hour work week, as you mentioned before, not a magic pill or anything like that, but what were some of the surprising lessons you learned as you moved towards this lifestyle?
So one of the surprising lessons was that it was possible. That actually. So my wife was this is 10 years ago. My wife is 7 months pregnant with our third child. We go into the doctor's, to a doctor's appointment. He says, you have preeclampsia. And if you don't go on strict bed rest for the next 3 to 5 weeks, you're going to go into seizures and lose this baby and possibly die. And all I knew was I'm not about to lose a baby over money. I have two other kids. My wife has to be on strict bed rest. I was working full time in my business. I was working 40, 50 hours a week. But I just knew I can't continue to do this. And so you asked what's the surprising thing. So I got home from the doctor's office and I wrote an email to two guys in the Philippines I'd had working for me. I had two at the time. And they had been with me for about 18 months. And I said, here's the situation. I can't work. I need you to take over everything I'm currently doing. And so I say that they've been with me for 18 months because I want people to understand I had trained these people. I had spent time with them. This wasn't like, oh, I'm going to hire someone today and they're going to run my business for me. That's not how this works. But I had spent time with these guys. So for the next 3 weeks, I worked 1 hour. And my wife had the baby 3 weeks later. And then for the next 2 months, I worked about an hour a week. And my business grew during that time. And you know, I'm not gonna make this up and say that they made the business grow. I had set it up so it was gonna grow regardless. But in that time, the business didn't fall apart because these two dudes took over the stuff that I was currently doing. And did they do it all as well as I was doing it? No, they didn't. But they kept doing it. And so that right there was a huge surprise to me, was because I didn't realize it at the time. They were capable of doing thought work because I had had them doing menial tasks. I just had them do a lot of it. And I realized then, they're way more capable than I thought they were. And I wonder what else they could do. So from then on, I started designing processes around them doing the work and to see like what are they capable of? Is this even possible? And sometimes I've been disappointed, but I stuck with it. And usually we worked out a solution to that thing and they're capable of doing this other thing too, that I didn't think that they could do. So that was like a really big surprise to me that kind of changed what I was able to do, that changed my ability to live this lifestyle.
John, thanks for sharing with us that story of how you fully got into the 17-hour work week. I mean, that is quite the introduction to it. I'm happy that everything was able to turn out okay. And as I see you able to live this lifestyle where you're able to put in 17 hours a week, live the lifestyle you want to live. There are a lot of people who haven't achieved that lifestyle. And with that in mind, I'm wondering, what do you believe holds most people back from reaching their full potential?
So holds them from reaching their full potential or holds them back from living this lifestyle?
I'd like to do both if possible, because I always ask guests about potential.
All right, so let's talk about the lifestyle first. I think one of the biggest things that holds people back is the decisions they make in their business. So, for example, any decision, anything that we take on, I evaluate it based on what's the potential reward from doing this thing and who has to do the work? Because if I have to be involved in this process at all down the road, other than, you know, designing the process and seeing it in the beginning, I'm not interested. We won't do it. I don't care how much money is involved. I'm not going to do the work. And so that right there, I think, is a big difference between what I have done and what most people are willing to do. Most people see an opportunity and they go after it immediately without thinking of the long-term consequences. So, you know, if it requires them to always be involved with clients, they still do it because there's money involved. And I'm not willing to do it. So, like, people always ask me, do you do coaching? No, I don't do coaching. But you could charge so much. But I don't care. Coaching is trading time for money. And I always say no to it. So what keeps people from reaching their full potential? I've never been asked that before. And I'm not sure that I have a good answer for it. I think a lot of people are not willing to think. And I've talked about that a lot, but when I say that, I mean, like, a lot of people in their businesses, they want a blueprint to follow, right? And then when something goes wrong, they're like mad, or, you know, this doesn't work, or, oh, that other thing over there, that new launch product looks really awesome, better than what I'm doing now. And they're not willing to stick with something when something gets hard and find a solution. And thinking through stuff is the hardest part, usually, like coming up with a solution to it. And if you don't know how to do part of that solution, thinking through how to do part of that solution, you know, thinking through it and applying your mental energy, I think is what prevents a lot of people from reaching what they want.
John, thank you for sharing us what you believe holds most people back from reaching their full potential and also living the 17-hour work week lifestyle. And throughout the journey, regardless of how many hours you're working every single week, and if you're even trying to scale down to 17 hours per week while still your business is growing, there are definitely going to be certain challenges along the way. So, John, I'm wondering if you could share with us a big challenge you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge. I know the challenge you mentioned earlier, that was really significant. I'm not sure if you've had a more challenging moment than that moment with your wife, but and their child. But if you could think of another one, or if you just want to double down on that one, that'd be great.
Challenging moments in the business. So yeah, we recently found that something we were doing wasn't legal. And we had no idea, and we still think it's stupid, but it was something we were really excited about and found out, like, there's no reasonable way for us to pay for what it would cost to make this acceptable to the government for us. And so we dumped it. And that was it was hard to dump something you spent so much energy on. And I have often seen other people, like, say, oh, but we're so far into this, we just gotta finish it, even if it's the wrong thing, even if it's dumb, or even if it's not going to work out in the end. People are unwilling to drop it. Just realize, like, this isn't worth doing. Let's move on. You know, it's a sunk cost. And that was a challenge recently that we went through. And in the end, you know, we're probably better for it. At least we sleep better because of it. So,
John, thank you for sharing with us that big challenge and the powerful lesson you learned during that challenge. And earlier I mentioned how the 4-hour work week had a big impact on you. And I'm wondering if you could share three other books that had a big impact on you that would help us grow our businesses, be productive, and delegate?
Three books that will help you be productive and delegate?
Yes.
No, I can't. I can share three books that have affected my life.
That works.
I can share three. Yeah. So the number one book is the Book of Mormon, which most people don't want to hear this, but that's what has affected my life the most. It's a book of scripture that I read every day, and along with the Bible, and I'm a religious person, and it's affected my life. Another book that I think will help people in terms of what we're saying, I read this, I don't know, 15 years ago, was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. In the book, he just talks about recognizing assets and liabilities. And with that, I've never had any debt. And not having a car payment and not having credit card bills or furniture debt or whatever, any debt at all, is a big, big deal when you have an opportunity come up and you can take the leap. You can take that risk. And Rich Dad, Poor Dad kind of taught me that. Or at least it planted the seeds. Rich Dad, Poor Dad, along with The Millionaire Next Door, planted the seeds years ago for me to make that decision and be like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to buy a car because I'm just going to save my money. And I'm going to drive this piece of crap 1992 Toyota Tercel that we're driving until I can afford to pay cash for the next car. And yeah, I think that has had a significant impact on my luck. People always say you're lucky. I'm like, no, dude, luck has nothing to do. Luck is preparation plus opportunity. I had no debt. Opportunities came. I was prepared. I had saved money. Opportunities came. Or I was prepared with this knowledge. Opportunities came. And you have the chance to take advantage of those opportunities when you have prepared.
I really love that idea of being prepared for those opportunities and not just letting luck, like believing in luck and hoping that that's your breakthrough, that you get lucky. And those are some really great book recommendations. Those will be at the show notes at markcaperti.com/E86. And before we get to the part where you share with Breakthrough Success listeners, where they can find you on the web, I'm going to flip the tables a little bit. So I've asked you a lot of questions throughout this episode, and I'm wondering, what is one question that you believe we need to be asking ourselves more often?
I think a lot of people would do really well to ask themselves, man, I wish I could have thought of this ahead of time. Am I progressing? Like, am I progressing in what I'm doing? Am I progressing in this job? Am I progressing in this relationship? Am I progressing in this process in my business? Am I progressing in my health? Am I progressing, or am I stagnant? Because if you're progressing, you're happy. If you're stagnant, you're not. Or it's really hard to be happy if you're stagnant. And I think that question, and it's a hard question, right? Like, you're in a job and you're not progressing. And if you ask yourself the question, am I progressing? And the answer is no, then you got to do something to change it. And that's hard. Or maybe you're far into something and you're not progressing with it, but you're far into it and you got to get rid of it. Or you're behaving somewhere in a relationship that is not progressing, and you've got to do something to change that. It's something I think about a lot. Am I progressing?
John, thank you for taking the time to share that question that you believe we need to be asking ourselves more often. I'll get to the part where I just hinted at earlier for Breakthrough Success listeners who want to find John Jonas on the web. John, where do we go?
You can find me on Facebook, John Jonas. I don't think I'm facebook.com/John Jonas, but you can find me there, even though I don't like Facebook. I have made myself available. I am available through email, and you can get me there through any contact us link on any one of my websites. I don't usually give out my email address on the air, but I will respond to email. And so if you contact and say it's for John, it'll get to me. Yeah, those are two good ways.
John, thank you for taking the time to share your insights on this episode. And for Breakthrough Success listeners who are wondering where they can access the links in the show notes, that particular link is markgaberti.com/E86. John, it was such a pleasure to have you on the Breakthrough Success podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Breakthrough Success listeners, I need your help to keep this show running. I choose not to use sponsored ads in my episodes to provide you with a better experience. However, this decision gives me little money to pay for storage in my team, which comes over to over $1,000 per month. So please consider supporting the Breakthrough Success Podcast on Patreon by heading over to patreon.com/markguberti. For as little as $1 per month, you can help Breakthrough Success stay running while taking advantage of exclusive content and other perks that come with being a patron. To help support Breakthrough Success, head over to patreon.com/markguberti or search for Breakthrough Success on Patreon. That way, I can maintain the Breakthrough Success podcast so it stays running and provide you with valuable episodes.